Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome, diners and travelers and other people interested in the lifestyle things that we talk about here at onthemenuradio.com. This is Peter Haig, co-hosting single-handed once again, but we hope Anne's going to be back with us again very soon. As always, you can get in touch with us by sending an email to onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. So if you want to send Anne good wishes, we'd be delighted to make sure that she gets them. And we have our first guest on the program already this morning. It was going to be an action-packed day, and we've had a little fun that I can tell you about sometime. But we have Dr. Karagiozis, who is with a company called Sense. You're not going to believe this, but they make rose water. Dr. Michael, tell us about that.
Well, yes, actually, Americans have not really been familiar with this, but rose nectar has been around for a very long time. Leonardo da Vinci actually drank it, and it's been throughout the Europe, Middle East, and the Far East for a while. It's essentially the tea, if you will, made from rose leaves. Regular tea, as you know, is made from the leaf of the camellia. This is made out of rose petals. It's a wonderful light flavor, scented with rose, full of antioxidants and flavonoids, and people have been drinking it for a very long time. It makes a wonderful mix.
Now, you snuck something in there. You said that tea is really made from camellias?
Yes, it is. Tea is made out of camellia leaves, so this is not even that unusual of a product.
Okay, but rose is not made out of rose leaves. It's made out of rose petals.
Rose petals.
Now, I have to ask you this. It says, Michael Fitting Karagiozis has extensive medical legal experience working with the Nevada Office of the Attorney General from 1991 to 1998. You're going to have to do a little to bridge us over to why you're involved with rose nectar and rose tea.
Well, actually, I'm also a regular physician. I do have a forensic background, but I'm internal medicine trained. And the former governor of the state, who hired me to work for the state years ago, is actually involved with the product, and that's how they came across me.
I see. Okay. All right. So they knew about the medical benefits, and they said we need a doctor to really help understand that.
Right. Well, I've done clinical research with pharmaceutical companies, and I understand testing, so they needed somebody to come in and say, you know, we've tested it, this is what it looks like, this is what it is, and I'm the one they picked.
There you go. So, and you're involved with the company, or were you just their advisor?
I'm just an advisor.
But you're a spokesperson, right? Because when we asked who can we talk to at Sense, they said the doctor is the one you should talk to.
That's wonderful. I do know the product. I love the product. And we've been working on it now for almost 2 years. So I'm very proud to have the opportunity to talk about it anytime.
Oh, that's great. Now, but roses have been around for 35 million years. Fossilized rose blossoms were found 35 million years ago. In Greek mythology, Aphrodite, the goddess of love, is said to have created the rose when her tears mix with the blood of her lover, Adonis. Now, are you Greek, Michael?
I am, and okay. I congratulate you, because Karagiozis is hard to say, but you got it right the first time. I'm very pleased.
If I probably tried three more times, I'd get it wrong three times. But the roses used in the Sense product are from a different place.
Well, they're from Bulgaria. They're the Kazanlak rose, which is most similar to the original old wild rose, as opposed to the hybrid roses you think of when you think of British hybrid tea roses and stuff like that.
This is not necessarily grown for its beauty. It's grown for the fact that there's a lot of rose water oil. There's a lot of oil in the rose water, I guess.
Right. The rose product is there. It is more like your ancient Greek love potion with Adonis than it is a modern look-at rose. Russians tested it long ago and found out that it had similar properties to green tea.
Great. Anne absolutely loves green tea, and it's supposed to be awfully good for you. But what process does it go through? I mean, you don't just put roses in hot water, like you said. It has to be more complicated than that.
Much more complicated. The Kazanlak rose, for one thing, unlike tea roses, only blooms once a year. It's not a full-season bloomer. So they have to very rapidly get the blossoms off. They, just like tea or any other vegetable, they would go bad quickly, so they have to be crushed. The juice has to be extracted, and it's hermetically sealed to keep it fresh. Although with the concentration, even back in the days of Galileo, it stayed fresh sort of naturally with the concentration of the antioxidants and the sugars and stuff that come out of the rose itself.
And when does sense get its hands on it?
When did sense get its hands
on it? No, I mean, when in the process does sense start its own processing? I mean, they don't grow the roses, I guess. You're probably buying the rose nectar from somebody else?
Right. They have a fairly exclusive contract in Bulgaria for the original nectar. And then it's actually packaged and put in the fabulous glass bottles that you've seen, or the large Tetra Pak. And from there, it's marketed all over the world. So we get it really right out of the factory. As soon as it's made into the nectar itself, it's packaged in Bulgaria and sent around the world from there.
Oh, so it's actually packaged in Bulgaria?
To be fresh, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Like, I didn't realize. Now, I can't remember what contain. We got some samples, and we really loved this product. And it does have something of the odor of roses along with it. Am I right now, Michael? I mean, some of that remains.
It has that lovely light fragrance, not the heavy sweet fragrance of roses. It has a lovely light fragrance, and that taste, of course, is a sense of sweetness and lightness that's very, very unique.
Now, what was the packaging we got? We didn't get the wonderful, very impressive glass packaging. Probably because we wanted to do was taste it and make sure it was good, which it was. So you mentioned another kind of packaging, a Tetra something?
The Tetra Pak is for homes and restaurants. It's a large liter container. It's more like a milk carton.
There you go. They were the ones we got.
Okay, and then it also comes in the designer glass containers, which make wonderful Valentine's gifts. Women just love the.
There you go. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that on the front of the brochure. And I thought, I don't remember seeing one of those. It was this other form factor that we got. How do people find this product?
Well, the product is available. You can actually go online, Sense Nectar, S-E-N-C-E, Nectar, N-E-C-T-A-R.com. Go there. It's being distributed right now throughout Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean by Nevada Rose, which is our company. Basically, if people go to liquor stores, wine outlets, fine food stores, and put in requests for it, it can be delivered pretty much anywhere.
So you can buy it online?
They can order online.
Okay.
They can order through wholesalers.
Okay. Well, I have to tell you, this is really, it was a surprise. It was surprising how good it was. It's so wonderful to know that it's good for you as well. And it's also good to know that the country of Bulgaria, which I guess is making something of a comeback from the years of domination under the Soviet regime. How are things over there now?
Things are better. In fact, the tourism industry there has blossomed, no pun intended, but the tourism industry there has blossomed. And Bulgaria, I'm Greek, I'm from that Eastern mindset. Bulgaria is a beautiful country. And I urge your viewers to go. But this is a wonderful product, and I think it's a nice start for them. It can be mixed in all kinds of ethnic foods. And you are probably familiar that kubiatas and other Greek pastries use rose water and rose nectar.
I didn't know that, so I'm glad you mentioned that too. So you don't just drink it; you can also use it in cooking.
Cooking, it makes great mixers. If you have a seltzer bottle, it makes a nice sparkling beverage. It mixes well with a whole variety of.
I'm pretty sure I did that. I like to do that.
Oh, it's delicious. And if you like angel food cake, if you use the scents, the rose angel cake is something to try. Just wonderful.
A rose angel cake. Now, what do you use rose water instead of? Water or milk, is that what you do?
Exactly. We use the rose nectar instead of the liquid, and you just get a fabulous flavor that's like nothing else.
Well, it's fascinating. A physician turned rose water expert. You're quite one of the more unusual guests that On the Menu has had the privilege of speaking to. Dr. Karagiozis, I do thank you for joining us today. The website, again, as a reminder, please.
It's Sense, S-E-N-C-E, Nectar, N-E-C-T-A-R.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, sir.
And at that point, we'll take a break.
Brr, it's gotten cold outside. Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding. An old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
Welcome back to On the Menu Radio, listeners. Welcome back. Unfortunately, Miss Anne is still not with us, but she is getting better, I'm pleased to say, and you can get in touch with her if you want to send her greetings at On the Menu at onthemenuradio.com. You can do the same if you have any comments or any things to contribute to the program. I feel good. The next segment's a feel good. The next segment is some local people from Pittsburgh who are making a remarkable contribution to charity through a very special event upcoming that I think you'll all enjoy. I caught up with them to talk about it, and I want you to listen to what they have to say.
Peter's at Sonoma Grill in downtown Pittsburgh. It's lunchtime, but that's not the reason that I'm here today. I'm here to talk to three guys who are running a very special event upcoming that you need to put on your calendar. First up, Eve Caro.
Yes, Eve Caro, chef and owner of Sonoma Grill, and we're here to talk about Passion for Wine, Cystic Fibrosis Fundraiser, happening November 3rd at the PPG Winter Garden. This is a very special event, very special charity that I've been supporting for over 7 years.
That's amazing. Now, Uri Markowitz, Uri Markowitz, okay, is the master of ceremonies for this event.
Yeah.
Uri, what are people going to feel like?
Excitement. I've been a part of this ever since Eve got me involved. I worked for Eve some time, and Eve said, I should be involved with cystic fibrosis. And as a newfound father, I have even more feeling towards reasons why we have to defeat this horrible, horrible disease. And, you know, it's just an event that is really a lot of fun. It's definitely for those who have a real passion for life, a real passion for wine, and just, you want to help, you know, beat this disease. It's just a great, great event, and it's extremely, extremely important.
Now, there's a very special winemaker who's coming from Chile, I believe.
Aurelio Montes, yes. He is he's really one of the leaders of wine when it comes down to Chilean wine. He's been around. They've actually been making wine since the 60s. We weren't able to see that wine, though, until mid-80s, and no one really bought Chilean wine at that point because they were, all they knew was California wine, French wine, a little bit of Australian wine, but we're lucky enough to have him. And we're going to be serving a lot of his wines at the event, definitely parts of the Alpha series, Montes Alpha Chardonnay, Montes Alpha Cabernet, which actually are currently in our state stores, as well as we'll be serving at the VIP event a most delicious Syrah called Montes Folly, which is truly an exceptional wine. It actually has a bit of Viognier, similar to that of the Côte Rôti style of wine. But I could talk about that all day, but that's not what we're here for. Once again, it's about cystic fibrosis and beating this disease. And in order for us to do that, we need people to come to this event.
Great. Now, it's been happening for a number of years, right, Patrick?
That is correct. I'm Patrick Mercier. I'm an entrepreneur. I came from Belgium and 20 years ago, and I got lucky enough to meet Yves Caro about 7 years ago, who told me this was a great event to be participating to. And since I was not affiliated to any specific foundation at the time, I thought that the people, the camaraderie around the wine and the food and the outstanding fellowship around pushed me to be involved. And I've been involved for 7 years in this great event that gets better and better. And I'm fascinated by the fact that cystic fibrosis has been very aggressive in solving people's lives as far as being able to prolong the life of a cystic fibrosis patient that used to have a life expectancy of 8 years old 30 years ago, and today has a life expectancy of about 37 years of age.
And a quality of life too, right?
That is correct. So the drug and the medication and all the money that has been able to be raised has improved quality of life for these people that suffer from that disease tremendously. And I feel great about being able, with a great group of friends and a great event where wine and food brings us all together to participate towards that endeavor.
this is wonderful. I mean, Eve didn't want me to harp on the fact that this is an enormously generous effort, but this is how I found out about it in the first place. I found out about it from a cystic fibrosis volunteer who also happens to collect blood at the blood bank, where I was at the time, and I told her about On the Menu Radio, and she said, you have to put this event on your show. And of course, as soon as I heard that, I was delighted to do that. Who's behind the menu? Is Eve behind the menu?
Well, yes, I have catered this event since the very beginning. Way back when I used to run Asiago, even before Sonoma Grill was on the scope. So for the last 7 years, come up with a menu that really is different in terms of the offerings that you see at normal fundraisers. The average fundraiser is a sit-down dinner with three courses maybe, and everything tends to be very banquet-oriented. I wanted to do something a little different. I wanted to do something special, and also I wanted to do something that was appropriate for the vista that we were using, which is the PPG Winter Garden, which is absolutely beautiful. And that space lended itself to have a station party, and I thought a party where people could stroll and mingle and socialize is something unusual in fundraising, and I thought it made a lot of sense. So 7 years ago, came up with a station concept. We've been changing and tweaking it every year, but it hasn't changed a whole lot. We have five different stations. We have a meat carving station, we have a vegetarian station, we have a seafood station with different items. This year we're going to incorporate new recipes from our new restaurant, Ceviche, which is located across the street from Sonoma Grill. But basically just a nice assortment of different foods.
And Yuri, you're the master of ceremony. What is the master of ceremonies going to do?
I'm just the guy who goes around and make friends. I'm here, actually. You know, the thing is about this event that makes it so excellent is it's just a relaxed event. And as Eve was telling you about the food, it's as if you're going into someone's home, a very beautiful home at that, and, you know, you're mingling, talking to people, talking about how we can, you know, how life is and how we can beat this disease. And, you know, it's about having a really good time and for a really right cause. And Master Ceremonies means I'm just there to tell people about how they can help us raise money. And that's all I'll be doing. And, of course, as well as communicating to everyone that they should all be smiling and just having fun.
Truly. Yeah, and if you are a businessman and you're listening to this, you would be interested in networking with very high-end individuals that I just can't wait to meet you in a surrounding that helps you to be very relaxed with a great bottle of wine, at will, by the way, so the wine flows.
Freely, that's for sure.
The food is outstanding. Ceviche is one of the greatest new South American influence in Pittsburgh, so you will get all that, and you will have the Californian food experience. And again, as a businessman, as chair of this event, I strongly recommend you making new friends, and it's a great avenue to know that your money will be best working for you, knowing that 90% of it will go directly to the foundation.
Peter, I want to say, you know, last year we had a very successful year. This event alone raised over $100,000 net.
This is wonderful. Now,
for people who don't know cystic, you need to know that it's one of the most efficient charity out there in terms of netting money. Over 90% of everything that is all the funds that are raised or go directly to research. And it's very important for two reasons. First of all, cystic fibrosis is what we call an orphan disease. It's an extremely rare disease that's not affecting enough people for it to call a lot of attention to.
So you have to take the initiative and raise a lot of money yourself if you want progress to be made.
Exactly. And the second reason is it receives no federal funding whatsoever.
All the funding is done through fundraising and, you know, through the generosity of private individuals and corporations. And as I mentioned, last year we raised about $100,000. I think that this year we're going to do better than that. And there's two ways that we do it. One is, of course, by selling tickets and selling sponsorships.
Let's not forget, how do people get their tickets?
Well, they can get the tickets by calling the foundation. Do we have the number with us? Yes, you can call. You could contact Lindsay Jack at 412-321-4422. And the tickets are purchasable for $150 a piece. And there's also sponsorships availability as well. But the other way, the second way that we raise money during the event is through our live auction.
Now, is there also a website that people can go to, Patrick?
Yes, they can. They can contact actually the same person, Lindsay Jack, at LJACK@CFF.org.
There isn't actually a web page for the event itself.
That's correct. Well,
no, there is. If they go to CFF.org,
CFF.org.
Actually there, because it's this is a national foundation, so therefore there are actually links directly on the Pittsburgh website.
And the links will also be will be on the update section of the homepage,
yes.
www.onthemenuradio.com. It's been there already, but I'm going to put it up again right after the show broadcasts on Sunday.
Right. We appreciate that, Peter. And also, it's good to know that the major sponsors in Pittsburgh are going to be part of this event, like Mind Safety Appliances, Solvay Pharmaceuticals, Mercer Bank, Kirkpatrick, and Lockhart, and Meyer and Covey and Scott, Respironics, to name a few, Pepperweed. I think we have great companies that feel that this event is well worth the attendance. Again, 300 people show up in a black tie, semi-formal event, and I think it's one way to get dressed up, enjoy the wine,
You didn't tell me it was black tie. I was planning on coming. I do black tie all that often.
It's optional.
Black tie optional.
It's optional.
Okay. Black
but
tie optional. So
if you have a tuxedo, it's one of the more reasons to pull it out.
So Patrick, Uri, and Eve will all be in tuxedos.
Yeah.
And
I will not.
And all the rest.
You should tell them that the wine auction.
Let's do the wine auction.
There's actually two auctions. One is a live auction, the other one's a silent auction. The silent auction is
trips.
And, well, the silent auction is primarily a lot of the wines that we take in for what we call passion for wine parties. A lot of the wine is donated. In fact, all of the wine is donated at smaller events that we have throughout the year building up to this event. We take that wine and we actually create different lots for it. And then on some of the other wines, we actually create what is known as live auction lots, where we take 10, 12 of maybe some of the best wines donated, and we actually auction them off with the whole nine yards with an auctioneer who does everything from bidding. It's a lot of fun.
We'll have one or two Bordeaux lots. We'll have one or two California Cabernet lots. Everything is very upscale, very top of the line. Most of the wines are reserve wines. Very hard to find wines. They come from private collections mainly. As already mentioned, we have fundraisers. We have many fundraisers throughout the year to put those bottles together, but the wine comes from very reputable wine collectors, very good wines, and very good vintages.
Well, listen, let's wrap this up. It's November 3rd. It's at the PPG Winter Garden. The contact information you got sounds to me like it's going to be one of the best food and wine parties of the year. So the last word,
is more than just come. If you can't make it to this event, there's no reason to not become involved with cystic fibrosis. There's always a need for more people to help and give their time in a volunteer basis.
And we'll take a break now.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal.
We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
Welcome back, everybody, and for those of you who are missing Anne, you have the opportunity to hear her beautiful voice on the very next track. We have been collecting adventures in California. We had so many of them that we haven't had time to fit them all into the program. The next one up is a really special treat. I think we planned to use it a couple of weeks ago, and then we couldn't fit it into the program. One of the latest fascinating developments in the whole food and wine business is the emergence of a new generation of bartenders who specialize in unusual cocktails, takeoffs of old-fashioned recipes, reinventing new ones, some of them perhaps a little sweet for our taste. But we ran across a bartender, a mixologist, I guess you might call him, at Cyrus Restaurant in California, who is quite unusual in that he had a whole story just about him in Food and Wine magazine, and his reputation is well-earned.
Scott Beatty, I want to know how you ended up being a mixologist.
You know, I actually have a slight aversion to the term mixologist. I prefer to call myself a bartender. You know, I don't know who came up with that word. I don't think there's anything wrong with referring to yourself as a mixologist, but it just sort of rubs me the wrong way. I'm perfectly happy being a bartender, you know, for the rest of my life. How did I end up doing it? I think the restaurant business was something that I'd been involved with since I was a teenager. You know, I was washing dishes when I was in high school. I was kind of bussing tables later on in college, sort of got into the bar side of it, initially just because the money was very good. You know, you work the front of the house in the restaurant business, you make cash every night when you're young and broke. That's kind of the best business to be in, legal anyhow. So that's sort of what got me started in it. And I was born and raised in San Francisco, so I had a very early exposure to interesting kind of multicultural flavors, you know, Asian, Italian. I can't think of another place in the world where there's so many different kinds of restaurants in such a small area and a community, like the one in Northern California, that really embraces, you know, all of those cultures, and everybody's curious about where the ingredients come from, how they're raised, all the rest of that. It's definitely, you know, a serious foodie culture and has been for a long time. So I think that got me passionate about food and about the restaurant business at an early age. The bar thing, I think I just kind of I latched onto that facet of it because I think for a long time, bars have kind of just been profit centers at restaurants. People don't give them a lot of love and attention. You basically are just expected to kind of get a drink. It does its job. Everybody's happy. You know, people didn't pour a lot of creativity into that part of a restaurant until recently. And I think if you look at what the bartenders in San Francisco are doing right now, they're definitely on the kind of forefront of that.
Another term, by the way, I thought I'd throw in is bar chef. That one turns my stomach. But anyhow, tell us, what are these? You were just featured in last October at Gourmet Magazine. Tell us what the bartenders in San Francisco are doing with the cocktail. What is the state of the American cocktail?
Well, I think it's definitely getting more interesting. What we're doing at Cyrus is a little bit different than what people are doing in San Francisco, because Cyrus is in Healdsburg, California, which is in northern Sonoma County, which has been an agricultural community for quite a while. Not just wine country, but there's a lot of small farms out here, small dairies, people producing meat, cheese, growing vegetables, flowers, everything you can think of right in the area. And it wasn't until I got out here about 3 years ago and started going to the two weekly farmers markets that they have in the area that I realized that I was having access to product that nobody else could get. And moreover, once I became friends with some of these farmers, they would show me seed catalogs, we'd talk about what potential ingredients were, and they started growing things specific for the bar. And I think a lot of the product that we use in our cocktails is very, very unique and different and hyper-seasonal. I mean, it's not just that we have Thai basil grown, it's that I also use the Thai basil flowers, which are around for a very limited amount of time, as garnishes, and that goes for a number of the other herbs. Berries, we have access to dozens, or I'd say about a dozen different kind of berries up here that we can pick almost daily. I can go out and get it for free. If you look at my toes right now, I have blackberry juice all over me. I'm staining my shirt because I was out picking blackberries about an hour ago, but, you know, they're out in the woods out here and they're free. And so it's super fresh product, very local. We get it ourselves. It's like that with a lot of the things that we get for the bar. And I enjoy it. It's fun. It's a lot of work, but, you know, I think the result is something special.
And pretty, because you're working on a book and you're showing photographs of these books. Can you just sort of describe a couple of special cocktails?
Special cocktails? We're going to be doing probably about 50 different drinks, and it's essentially going to be broken down by season. So for the person who's buying the book, if you were to be able to go to a farmer's market, say, in June, what would be at the market and what could you use? So in June, we definitely would have berries. So it'll talk about how you source out those berries, process them at your house, get the drink ready to go, and then put it together. We're doing a drink right now called a blackberry lick, which involves using these blackberries. You press them through a chinois, all the juice comes out. You put a little bit of lemon juice in there, a chiffonade of an herb called anise hyssop, which is grown by Love Farms right up the street. A local all-natural raspberry-enhanced vodka coming from Hangar One over in Alameda. A little bit of seltzer, a little bit of simple syrup, which has been enhanced with hyssop essential oil coming from a company up in Oregon. And it's garnished with a little echinacea flower, more berries, and a little leaf of anise hyssop. That's one. We're also doing Bellinis right now. A friend of mine grows white. Yeah, it's that time of year. A friend of mine grows these white peaches out on West Dry Creek Road here. So we're able to go there a couple of times a week, pick these peaches, again, grind them down, press them through a chinois, and have this beautiful peach puree, which we add a little bit of lemon juice, peach bitters, Prosecco. We're doing a lot of things with food dehydrators right now, too. So in this case, we take a peach chip. You cut off a little slice of peach, dehydrate it in a food dehydrator, put a little piece of peppermint on it, Chinese spice honey. It takes about 24 hours to make it, but that sits on top of the drink with safflower threads. Really pretty drink.
Scott, tell us particularly about, because you have some unusual twists and turns to your program here at Cyrus, your cocktail program. Tell us some of your, I don't want to say eccentricities, how about focus?
Some of our focus, I think, the part of the part of the cocktail menu that I think we're known for the most is the seasonal part. And what we do is we try to source out local peak of season ingredients grown by three or four different farms, and some of the things that we grow ourselves or forage for ourselves. And we also use liquor from local distilleries. So we're talking about Domaine Charbet in St. Helena, Hangar One, the St. George people out in Alameda, Germain Roban up in Ukiah, Sartitius Gin down in Santa Cruz, the Anchor Brewery and distilling people down in San Francisco, Fritz Maytag's products, the Old Potrero and the Junipero. And there's a number of other ones, too. So it's really local product, local liquor. And that's kind of what we're trying to work with. Not exclusively, but for the most part.
I was hoping, when I mentioned Quirky, I was looking for you to explain the project that you ultimately, I understand, abandoned of matching water for the ice cubes to the origin of the liquor.
Well, I had success with getting branch water from Kentucky. Kentucky sits on this huge limestone shelf, and all of the groundwater is filtered through there. So what it does is it actually pulls the iron out and imparts calcium to it, and it's very soft water. And when you go through bourbon country in Kentucky, almost every distillery, they're very, very proud of their branch water, and they talk about how they use the local branch water and, you know, cut their spirit down to bottling strength with it, and they're very proud of it. And so after going there a few years ago, I decided to call a couple of the distillers and see if I could get it sent out so that I could make ice cubes out of it and serve it with some of the better bourbons. And also, you know, the sort of barrel strength things that they sell, like George T. Stagg, which is 140 proof, you know, you got to cut it down with water. Well, why not use the water from there? So that went well. I had four distilleries send it out for free. I never charged anybody at Cyrus for it. I still don't. And then I started looking at Scotland, and I was like, well, why can't I do this with Scotch? And, you know, I called all these distilleries, and they all thought I was absolutely crazy. They said, well, first of all, I don't think that we can ship you water without having the government look at it first, and we'd have to da-da-da-da-da. And they just gave me all these reasons why they couldn't do it. And so it never happened, and I gave up, you know.
But now I've just read a lengthy discussion on the importance of tonic, that you have to use the actual British tonic to go with the gin, for gin and tonic.
Well, mixers, people are definitely using better quality mixers these days. Most tonic water, at least in the United States, comes out of a gun, like a bar gun, which is a big bag of syrup, and then it mixes it with soda water, basically, and then it comes out of the gun. It's like a soda fountain. You know, that's the Coca-Cola, 7-Up, tonic water, even juices like cranberry and orange juice and things. You know, and it's just, that's not good product. A step up would be to use a little bit of a little bottle, like the little Schweppes 10-ounce bottles. But even that, the stuff that they make here is sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. And it's just too sweet anyway. You know, I don't think it makes a very good drink. In Britain, they've been selling what they call Indian tonic water, Schweppes Indian tonic water, for quite a while. And that's less sweet. I don't think they use high fructose corn syrup in it. It's cane sugar. And it definitely is a step up. Even a step above that now is a brand called Fever Tree, which is made in Britain. They use natural quinine, natural citrus peels, other botanicals, and real cane sugar. And it's just not too sweet. I have a problem with sweet drinks anyway. I like acid in my cocktails, you know, and even something as simple as a gin and tonic, you know, I want to have the right amount of lime in there and not too much sugar. It's just, it's not pleasing to my mouth. You know, I like things dry and refreshing, right? That's what a gin and tonic should be.
You're my kind of bartender. Let's go. We'll go have, you can mix us one right now. I can't hardly wait for your book, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Scientist in the kitchen, and my producer's reminding me it's time to take a break, so we will.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Welcome back once again, listeners. We're in the home stretch at onthemenuradio.com, and it's always fun to meet up again with old friends, and we had the opportunity to bring two old friends together not too long ago. As those of you who have been to Lydia's Pittsburgh know, the kitchen's been just a little bit of a revolving door, and they have a new chef who's been there several months, Eric Spuds-Wallace, who you will know from Casbah and from Trilogy, now several months at Lydia's. Having a great time there, he tells us, and Lydia Bastianich was in town to meet with him and go over the full menu, and of course we took the opportunity to catch up with her and talk to her about how things are at Lydia's and what else she's been up to recently.
Lydia Bastianich, it's so good to see you again. I always enjoy, you look so sunny and happy when I see you, and this is what you look like on the cover of your new book.
Well, I'm happy, you know, when I'm with food, with friends, a glass of good wine, I'm happy.
Good. Now, you of course, are a PBS star, and you have how many other books, but you have a new one now.
Right.
And this is the one we wanted to talk about. It's a little bit different from your others. It's called Lydia's Italy. And could you just describe how you structured this book, and also about Tanya?
Sure. Well, Lydia's Italy, you know, my previous book, the last one was Lydia's Family Table. So I brought to the readers, the viewers, my family. They met all of my family. The books before Lydia's, the Italian Table, was the Italian-American Table. So the next step was to take my viewers with me to Italy, something that I do regularly, several times a year. And I go to Italy because I love it, because I visit with family, because I visit with friends, because I discover new things. So this book has 10 of my favorite places in 10 different regions. And I share with the reader, the cook, the chef, the place, the setting, my friends, the recipes. And in addition to that, this was my first collaboration with my daughter, Tanya Manuali Bastianich, who is a Renaissance art historian.
She has a PhD from where?
Oxford, England.
Oxford. Really?
Yeah. So she's really into her stuff. And, you know, when we traveled, even when she was a child, it was always the food, the wine, and the art. And so this book does just that. If you're in Padova and you want to have some tiramisu or some fegato alla veneziana, then you might as well go visit the Scraveni Chapel, which is wonderful.
Which I love, yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, it's sort of, you get to know the real Italy through food, through wine, through the people, and through the art.
Now, how did you get to 10? I mean, there's so many regions.
It was hard. It was very hard, and as a matter of fact, I'm working on the other 11. Because I just, you know, even the publisher said, you can't just leave them hanging like this.
So we're going to have a sequel.
Yes, yes.
Great.
Yes.
Now, which ones did you pick?
I picked, you know, I even included there Istria, which is not even Italy now.
Yeah.
But that's where I was born. So how could I write something and leave the beginning of my life out? The rocks where I used to sort of swim every summer, the market that I used to go with my grandmother to sell, to buy products. So I did Istria, which is now in Croatia. And then we did Trieste and Friuli, that region.
Yeah, we love Friuli.
Yeah. I did Treviso. Sometimes I focused on the whole region, sometimes on a city, because the city had so much to tell that I spent, you know, a whole chapter dedicated to a city. So the book is not 10 regions. It hits 10 different regions, but sometimes I focus on the city, as in Treviso, Padova also. Love Padova.
Did you happen to go to a restaurant there called La Calandre?
La Calandre, yes. Yes.
Is it wonderful?
Yes, very creative, very wonderful. Did you like it?
I did. And yeah, I'm particularly
he's one of the top chefs now.
He is. Is it when his mother, you know, got the first star?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Right.
And then he got the next two before he was 30.
That's an achievement.
That is an achievement. But I'd like the saffron risotto with the Abruzzo licorice fruit shaped.
Oh, the shaved licorice fruit. Yeah.
Which I never had before.
Yeah, it's a nice. Actually, you know, I just went to Calabria to do some research, and that's the center of licorice.
It is. I know.
Yeah.
We just at the fancy food show. There was a rep from licorice. I don't know if it was a council on licorice or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But he was selling.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a medicinal product as well as an enjoyable flavor. Yeah.
Now, you can't have favorites, obviously, with these regions. But what region surprised you the most?
Well, you know, it's been my life that I've been going to this region. So I think that the surprises that maybe I brought to the reader is, let's take, for example, Tuscany. You know, Tuscany, Florence, Chianti, everybody thinks of that. I didn't touch that. I went to Maremma.
Maremma, yes.
I love the Maremma, and the rustic Maremma has a lot to say.
Now, the Maremma is one place that's just being discovered. In fact, I think, didn't some famous designer do a...
Alain Ducasse.
Alain Ducasse.
No, it was a chef. Alain Ducasse has a place there.
Yes, has a place. We also have a vineyard there in Maremma.
Oh, you have another one in Maremma.
Yes, we produce a Morellino. A Morellino. La Mozza is the vineyard. It's a little town. And so we have, I love that area. It's rustic. It's great. They have a culture of cowboys. They call the butteri. And they parallel the Texas kind of cowboys where they corral the longhorns and they have their own outfits and their own hats, and it's really fun. Yeah.
Now, what other region do you think with readers will be surprised to learn?
You know,
about?
Puglia. I love Puglia. Have you been in Puglia?
Yes. Years ago.
Yeah. I think it's a region. It's still naive, and yet there's so much culture. You know, it's the actual heel of the boot. So, you know, Greek influence, a lot of in the architecture, in the language, in some of the food, the grain, it's the grain belt, the second grain belt of Italy. So durum wheat, hard wheat grows wonderful there.
Garlic producing.
They use favas, ceci, the legumes, the buffalo, not the mozzarella, the burrata.
Okay.
You know, the burrata, which
right,
is
right,
that
right.
creamy cheese, almost like a mozzarella. is a staple there, but eaten in the place, you know, when it's just is made, is just outstanding. Some of the best bread, Altamura, the best bread of Italy comes from Altamura because of its durum wheat. So I think it's a straightforward cuisine. It's a cuisine based on grains, on legumes, on greens, but chicory, intense greens, and great crusty breads.
Making me hungry, Lydia. What did you think of Sicily?
I love Sicily.
Yeah, that's my background.
Yeah, I think Sicily has so much history, so much. I think it has come into its own, I think, thanks to writers and people like you that, you know, have continuously, you know, sort of researched it and brought it back. The Americans are really getting to want to know more about it. They travel there. But I think Italy is a special, sunny place where everything's intense. The food, the people, the rhythm, the sun. So it's a beautiful place to visit. It has great shores, good wine now, better than ever with
the new technology. Oh, it's really amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
The new technology, some great wines are coming out of there.
Of course, Greek wines are getting good, too. I'm amazed at that.
Yeah, well, you know, technology and awareness and good winemaking skills. Sure.
Well, now, we should tell people that they can probably get this book anywhere, but they can also go directly on our website and click onto it, the OTM bookshelf. onthemenuradio.com, and you can order it right there. And right. The
Knopf is the publisher, and
yes,
it's Lydia's Italy.
And the photographs, what about the photographs? They're gorgeous.
Well, you know, some of it, you know that I carry a camera. Now, I'm not a photographer, but sometimes you have an opportunity to catch a moment that you could never set up. So some of the photographs are actually me and Tanya traveling taken. But the professional photographs are by Christopher Hersheimer, and she's a wonderful photographer. She photographs food in a natural light, in very simple fashion, and that expresses my philosophy of food.
Well, now, what else is going on here? We're sitting in Lydia's Pittsburgh doing this interview, and you are announcing or introducing a new chef.
Right. Eric Wallet.
Spud Stassen.
You know him?
Oh, Eric Spud Wallace, of course.
Okay. He's with us 3 months, and he has great energy, great enthusiasm, and it's been great fun working with him and collaborating. So it's exciting. So I'm here. The chef from Kansas City is here. We did a tomato dinner last night, you know, seasonal tomatoes. So we're really getting into a groove. Sort of, this is his town. You know, this is a place for him to showcase his talents with some of the my food philosophy, his food philosophy. So we're really looking forward to the season, to many more events. He has ideas. Great. We'll develop them all.
And meanwhile, between you and your son, you're just everywhere, all over the board, with House Del Posto going in Manhattan.
Del Posto is doing really, really, you know, it's a big place, but it's, you know, it's just like a snowball rolling off, you know, getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I'm dying to go there. I'm waiting till it quiets down a bit so we can get
there. Oh, okay. All right. Now, there's always room for you.
Yeah, thank you. Lydia, now, as always, just love seeing you, love talking to you, and thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And good luck with your book.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Now, isn't it nice to hear Anne's voice again? Anyway, listeners, we'll be here again, same time, same place next week, so be sure to tune in. And in the meantime, don't forget to send those emails about the chocolate. You might win a prize. Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.